What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 29 of the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. My name is Ryan. I'm your host on this podcast. I bring you music reviews from a music lover. Today we are going to be reviewing new releases from Under Oath, The Eels, Dr. Octagon, and Bambera. All of these albums were released on April 6th. Hey, so before I get into the reviews, I'd like to do a couple of things. First, I'd like to give you another quote regarding music. This one comes from an author by the name of Sarah Dessen. And the quote is, "Music is the great uniter, an incredible force, something that people who differ on everything and anything else can have in common." End of quote. So do with that what you will. Also, I would like to talk a little bit about an idea that I've had for a long time, and I mentioned this on a post in the Radio Live Transmission Facebook community, so I'm sure some of you saw it. For a long time, I've been rolling this idea around in my head of writing a book that is about my life as it relates to music. I am an English major. So writing is something that I love to do. I find that writing for this podcast, you know, fulfills some of my desire to write, but I really, you know, would like to do more writing in the, you know, the time that I have to do it. So I think I'm going to seriously, or I should say start seriously thinking about and maybe even brainstorming, you know, this idea about, you know, my life as it relates to music, because I'm obviously a music lover, somebody who's always, you know, live their life with a soundtrack as much as possible. And music, you know, music has, I have a lot of very strong associations and memories that involve certain bands and certain songs and, you know, certain genres of music for various points in my life. Music has always been extremely important to me. So definitely going to start thinking seriously about that, and just figured I would let you guys know that so that you could, you know, keep that in mind. Thinking about maybe trying to use the podcast as a sort of tool to get some of that material out there in a sort of primitive form. So we'll see how that goes, and you know, keep your eyes and your ears out for that. So before I get into today's reviews, I'd like to give you you know, a couple of albums to listen to that I'm not going to review in depth. One is the album Sex and Food from the band Unknown Mortal Orchestra. That's a cool one. You should check it out. There's also a new record called Vacation in Hell from the group Flatbush Zombies. Also a good record. Definitely check that one out. And also there is a record called Song for Alpha by the artist Daniel Avery. You should definitely check that one out too. All right, let's get into today's reviews. The first review is for the new record from the band Under Oath, and the record is called Erase Me. So, Tampa, Florida's, you know, metalcore, post-hardcore, emo, screamo, occasionally industrial band Under Oath return with a record called Erase Me, their eighth studio album and their first album since 2010's record Zero, or maybe it's O, but anyway, the record is called Disambiguation. Under Oath went on a brief hiatus in 2013, only to reunite in 2015. So, since Under Oath's inception, they have had a chameleonic quality, initially mixing hardcore with black metal and death metal, as evidenced on their first two records, 1999's Act of Depression and 2000's record Cries of the Past. You know, since then, the band have, they've dabbled in melodic post-hardcore, indie rock, screamo, and also an eclectic, mathy hardcore with some post-rock and electronic touches on what many consider to be their pinnacle record, which was 2006's Defying the Great Line. And then, 2008's record, Lost in the Sound of Separation, found the band incorporating some industrial elements into their sound, and then 2010's Disambiguation pushed even further into, ambient territory. And now, given all of this exploration and also the 8-year gap between that record Disambiguation and this new record, I suppose it's no surprise really that Erase Me feels, like more of a disappointment to me than it feels like a departure, really. To call it a disappointment, it may be unfair to say, but given the constant sort of metamorphosis of this band throughout their career, it's just the fact of the matter is that Erase Me left me, really scratching my head after my first listen to it. And, my feelings about it haven't really changed since that first listen, unfortunately. Before I go any further, here's a sample from the album's first single, which is called On My Teeth. All right, so the record begins in, a promising enough fashion with a track called It Has to Start Somewhere, which balances the band's post-hardcore and electronic personalities in a pretty exciting, sort of damn about to break fashion. Vocalist Spencer Chamberlain sounds like a man who's fed up with the failings of, the religious worldview that he once put a lot of stock in, and the chaotic sort of back and forth between these really throaty screams and the tuneful singing that he's well known for, it's all over this track, and it really heightens the drama. But then the second track on the record, which is called Rapture, just takes the wind out of the album sales so early on. This track is everything that the opening track isn't. This track is repetitive, it's insubstantial in musicality and vocally, it's utterly predictable, and, predictable is something that this band once prided themselves on not being, so it's largely disappointing. The third track, and the first single off the album, which is called On My Teeth, of which you just heard a sample of, it redeems the band somewhat. And it's similar in style to the opening track. This track has garnered quite a bit of attention as the first Under Oath song with profanity. Oh my goodness. Now, the subject matter that Chamberlain deals with in the lyrics of this song, which he stated, it has to do both with drug addiction and his complicated relationship with his Christian faith. It seems very timely, in an era when the worldviews of populations in many places around the world are really in upheaval and, secularism continues to rise and become more prominent. Now, this sort of shaky beginning to this record is really a foreshadowing of what's to come on Erase Me. Tracks like Wake Me and also this track called I Hate It They employ the same sort of poppy choruses and typical song structures as the track Rapture. Sure they're catchy, but will I find myself listening to these songs, a year down the road or 6 months down the road or even 6 weeks down the road? I don't think so. But there's more interesting tracks like this track called Sync With You, which actually blends the album's electronic elements, with Underoath's more punkish, like post-hardcore side pretty well. And that's an indication of the potential that this marriage of sounds has. And also the track Hold Your Breath is it's anthemic in a far more satisfying sense than anything that really came before on this record. And also the track No Frame is proof positive that Underoath can write worthwhile electronic driven songs, that they can still write those. But, if Erase Me is an album that was sort of born from uncertainty and inner conflict, from a band with many faces finding themselves, reinvigorated, then I really hope that if and when they write another album, their confidence is again at a very high level. Because the band's catalog holds plenty of evidence of talent, versatility, and a heck of a lot of conviction too. I think they have it in them to make another, very good or even great record, but Erase Me is not that record. Though it has its moments, few and far between as they are. So I gave the record Erase Me a rating of 5.5 out of 10. All right, so moving on to the next record that I would like to talk about today. It is the new record from the Eels, and the record is called The Deconstruction. All right, so California's Mark Oliver Everett, aka E, who's the front man and really the only constant member of Eels since the band's inception in 1995, returns with his 12th studio album under the name and the first album of new material since 2014's record, The Cautionary Tales of Mark Oliver Everett. Now, many critics thought that Cautionary Tales was a somewhat bloated album, and unfortunately, the Deconstruction seems to suffer from the same problem. Here's a sample of the album's second track, which is called Bone Dry. Was a day when I did believe the things you say are what you mean. Dear sweet innocent me, how much it took for me to finally see Bone Dry. You drank all the blood. My heart is bone dry. Could give you more 'cause you took all of this. All right, so some of the material on The Deconstruction is quality, displaying Everett's, candid and honest songwriting that we've heard much of in the past. But what keeps the record from being great is a very disjointed structure. Now, things start off well enough with the title track, which is an interesting bit of noirish, almost murky electro pop. And Everett lets a listener know from the get-go that the major theme of this record is rebuilding, and that before a rebuilding can happen, a deconstruction must occur. And the following track, Bone Dry, which you heard a sample of just now, pretty like takes a listener into some Nick Cave territory, juxtaposing lyrics depicting, these shriveled, dried up hearts, with these kind of almost silly refrains of shooby dooby and sha la la. It's an interesting sort of juxtaposition. And it's a nice contrast also to the opening track, and really adds to the aesthetic that has been established of sort of breaking everything down in order to rebuild. Next comes an instrumental interlude, which is called The Quandary, and here's where, perhaps appropriately given the title, the album runs into trouble. the next track, which is called Premonition, is pretty spare. You know, there's finger-picked clean guitar, Everett's vocal, you know, and an ethereal sort of backup vocal as well. And the bare bones feel of this track renders the quandary just unnecessary and completely forgettable because it's so similar. And you know, this trend just continues as the tempo of the record slows down again on the sort of drifting on the ocean feel of a short track called The Epiphany, you know, which is followed in jarring fashion by the more upbeat track called Today is the Day, which is complete with, you know, hand claps and this brightly spastic synthesizer and these really jangly clean guitar chords. Now, the life-affirming, proactive feel of Today is the Day is followed by the somber promise of love, even in the face of coming apocalypse, on this track called Sweet Scorched Earth. Now, this is another jarring shift, thematically and emotionally, instead of musically. But, you know, this makes for two hard left turns on this record already. And then it's followed by another short instrumental interlude called Coming Back. I honestly begin to feel lost at this point in the record. A feeling which is somewhat alleviated by the next track, which is called Be Hurt. I say somewhat because while I enjoy this track's aesthetic and its instrumentation, which is balanced well between acoustic and electric guitars with occasional string passages and a few sort of odd vocal samples, it seems as if thematically the lyrics on this record are regressing, especially after the sort of, you know, springboard, the positive springboard of that track Today is the Day. And the following track, which is called You Are the Shining Light, is to me just this like mediocre stab at the, you know, the sort of garage rock that artists like Jack White and Dan Auerbach of the Black Keys have been popularizing in recent years. But, you know, and the track has this sort of air of spookiness that's lent to it by like this paranoid sounding synth, but it just doesn't save it at all. And this track ends as if it's just cut off, like they just stopped the tape. And the following track, which is called There I Said It, just kills the momentum that the track You Are the Shining Light created. And There I Said It, and then the short lullaby which follows, which is called Archie Goodnight, just deflate this album more and more. And then another interlude, which is called The Unanswerable, just leaves me completely adrift in this sea, you know, just without a paddle, without any hope of reaching shore. And I had really hoped that the final track on this record, which is called In Our Cathedral, you know, would just bring down the house, or at least, you know, give these proceedings a good rattle, you know. But it's just more of the same sort of airy fluff that Everett has filled this album out with. You know, this album has 15 tracks and could feasibly lose probably 4 or 5 and come out much stronger. You know, perhaps then it would feel more like an album and less like a collection of, you know, B-sides and rarities. You know, Everett really let this one get away from him, and he really needs to reel it in if he wants to keep this particular listener's attention. The theme, you know, here was supposedly deconstruction and rebuilding. There seems to be plenty of the former on this album, but it, you know, is to me it's sorely lacking in the latter. So I gave the record The Deconstruction a rating of 6 out of 10. All right, so moving on to the next record I'd like to talk about today. It is the new record from Dr. Octagon, who is an alter ego of a rapper named Cool Keith, along with the legendary producer Dan the Automator and also DJ Qbert. So, this new record is called Moose Bumps, an exploration into modern-day horripilation. So, Cool Keith, who's a veteran of the influential rap group Ultramagnetic MCs, a group who released three acclaimed albums between the late 80s and the, you know, the mid-90s, and who then went on to create this character of Dr. Octagon, who who is a time-traveling surgeon and gynecologist from the planet Jupiter, known for barbaric medical procedures and also seducing female patients. Keith returns with Moose Bumps. And just a side note before I continue, this term horripilation, if you don't know, it's the medical term for raised skin, you know, or goosebumps due to, you know, feeling of being cold or certain strong emotional reactions like fear. Now, apparently, and this comes from Dan the Automator himself, I heard him say this in an interview, the term is rebranded here as Moose Bumps because in the alternate universe of Dr. Octagon, geese are extinct. So, Moose Bumps, there you have it. Octagons is an odd, odd world. We'll just say that. So yeah, all of these odd characteristics, you know, really mesh well with Cool Keith's, you know, abstract and surreal lyrical style, you know, which does also have a sort of pornographic undercurrent to it. You know, Keith claims to have invented the horrorcore subgenre of rap, but of course, you know, that's up for debate. What's generally known is that he is a prolific artist with a string of solo releases under his belt. You know, such as 1996's Dr. Octagonicologist, which introduced the Octagon character. And there was also a sequel called The Resurrection of Dr. Octagon, which Keith initially collaborated on with a producer by the name of Fanatic. And this record almost didn't see the light of day after a falling out between the two artists and some legal troubles. The album was finally released in 2004 under the name Dr. Octagon Part 2, but Keith rarely acknowledged it. And Keith also has he's released a string of collaborative albums, you know, which include work with artists like Tim Dog, who was also a member of Ultramagnetic MCs. He also, you know, worked as part of a supergroup of sorts known as the Analog Brothers, which included Ice-T, Black Silver, Pimp Rex, and Mark Live. And he's also, you know, made appearances on tracks, you know, by the electronic group The Prodigy and also the indie rock band The Yeah Yeah Yeahs. So now we come to Moose Bumps, an exploration into modern-day horripilation, an album on which Cool Keith reunites with Dan the Automator and DJ Qbert, resurrecting, you know, the Octagon character and presenting an album that in many ways is a time capsule that folks in today's hip hop scene could use some exposure to. Here's a sample of the album's second track, which is called Polka Dots. The crowd throw out their vaginas. Rappers waiting on stage with sweat in their panty liners. I haul hogs from San Francisco to South Carolina. Paint wrapping the butt crack with a good primer. Over all the famous paintings, we take a leak on your best designers. Y'all block repping it with secondhand rhymers. From the Atlantic to Capitol. Even Def Jam, I laugh at you. Dark and stunk the ball over your mom like Darryl. Seahawk or Stalker, wear my helmet in the VW. I'm in love with you. Clean the engine, you know how I crew. Polka dot, Volkswagen, Learjet seats, rocket launchers. All right, so Moose Bumps actually starts in a less than stellar fashion on this track called Octagon, Octagon. You know, with a characteristic B-list horror movie beat from Dan the Automator. You know, and some impressive turntable scratching from DJ Qbert. But it's Keith's verses that are lacking on this track. You know, he uses his typical surrealist flow to depict a world that's under the influence of Dr. Octagon, you know, to the point where his name has penetrated all facets of life, you know, motorcycles, baby wipes, gasoline, rice and beans, etc. It's very odd. But, you know, this seems like a promising premise in an odd sort of way, but, you know, Keith just sort of repeating Octagon over and over comes across as very gimmicky. And for a guy who prides himself on intelligent rhymes, you know, and isn't afraid to call out others when they're lacking, this reintroduction to, you know, his most famous persona is, in my mind, a stumble. Lucky for him, though, the majority of the album beyond this opening track is far more interesting and consistent. Now, tracks like Polka Dots, you know, which you heard a sample of, and also his track called Area 54, just bristle with an energy that's missing from the majority of current hip-hop, you know, thanks to Dan the Automator's, you know, vintage sort of, you know, boom-bap on hallucinogenics-like production, and, you know, just an unleashed Keith, whose one-of-a-kind flow, you know, still makes me rewind a track or, you know, since we're in the digital age here, I'll say hit the back button. You know, Keith just drops the sort of verses that could keep me up all hours of the night trying to decipher what the hell he's talking about half the time. And elsewhere on the record, Dan the Automator injects some, you know, rock or metal flair into tracks like Power of the World and also a track called Karma Sutra, you know, which features this really chunky, distorted, palm muted guitar riff that, you know, to me rocks harder than the majority of rap metal artists could have ever really wished to. Also a track called Bear Witness 4, which is a sequel of sorts to a track from Octagon Ecologist, takes a listener way back to Boom Bap's glory days, you know, putting the album's sort of horrorcore leanings to the side for a little while, allowing Dan the Automator and DJ Kuber to take center stage and present a listener with a grand sounding sort of intermission. And then the record takes a turn into old school soul territory with the sort of lazy summer afternoon feel of this track called Flying Waterbed, adding, you know, one more dimension to the musical palette of the record. The record finishes in a much stronger fashion than it began with the closing track, Hollywood Tail Swinging, which sounds like the climax to a sort of surreal horror film with its, like, unrelenting, no-frills beat and some odd, like, 8-bit style sound effects. So, all in all, Moose Bumps is a pretty solid entry in Cool Keith, you know, and company's catalog, and a much worthier sequel to Octagon Ecologist than, you know, the failed experiment of The Resurrection of Dr. Octagon. At a time when, you know, the reboot has become standard practice in, you know, American film culture, it's not surprising that a rapper with a flair for the cinematic would, you know, enlist the help of his old comrades and reboot an alter ego that lent itself so well, you know, to a hip hop landscape that's increasingly influenced, you know, by popular culture. So I gave the album Moose Bumps a rating of 7.5 out of 10. All right, so moving on to the last record that I would like to talk about today, and my personal pick for this episode, it is the new record entitled Shadow on Everything from the band Bambera. All right, so Brooklyn, New York's sort of post-punk / rockabilly / noise band Bambera return with a record called Shadow on Everything, which is their third full-length release and the follow-up to last year's record Swarm. The boys have really traveled down a dark road so far, and it's not difficult to imagine from listening to Shadow on Everything that the night isn't really at its darkest just yet. You know, if the band's 2000 record Dream Violence captures the sonic atmosphere of like a fever dream or a chaotic nightmare with its deft use of noise and really killer dynamics, then this new record paints an oral picture of a sort of slow-burning, suspense or horror film, one which plays on the uncertainty of a viewer, or in this case a listener, as he or she moves, you know, inexorably to its finish. Case in point, the opening track on Shadow on Everything, which is called Dark Circles, you know, on which this thunderous, echo-laden, you know, When the Levee Breaks meets Dead Souls drumbeat cuts through this sort of dim haze of guitar noise, like light pouring into a dark saloon or a bar. When Reed Bate's Thundercloud voice sings, a naked kid is singing up on the stage. He's covered in paint and he's barking about the human plague. You know, a listener knows that this is no ordinary bar in a town that is, you know, will get no less odd with time on this record. So the lyrics in this track also cleverly set up some of the tales, you know, that will be explored on the subsequent tracks, i.e. Elsa, who's also known as the Doe-Eyed Girl, and Jose, character who has a date with Destiny and an oncoming train. When Bate sings, misanthropy can be so grating without a drink, you know, he gets kind of dangerously close to becoming a parody of himself, you know, or sounding overwrought. But fortunately, you know, he reins it in and stays on path throughout the record. And helpfully, it's revealed in the next song that the narrator in Dark Circles is a struggling poet whose name is Jack, who is new to, you know, this town, you know, that exists in the concept of this album. So in retrospect, you know, his line, misanthropy seems so grating without a drink, you know, the sort of heavy-handed image, really makes sense. Now, the next track, which is called Doe-Eyed Girl, really goes like full cowpunk, you know, in a pretty exciting fashion, with Bate telling this circuitous story about this girl named Elsa, who, as a child, watches a deer die by gunshot, like out one of the windows of her house, and then flash forward to the present, and our sort of misanthropic poet Jack, who's really struggling because he believes that his muse has sort of fallen asleep on the job. You know, he finally finds an inspiration when the now grown Elsa, you know, is presumably struck by a car, you know, outside the bar that Jack is sitting in, and Jack watches her die. Bate relays this story in a sort of like street preacher meets folk singer performance, like Johnny Cash or Bob Dylan with more hellfire. And the music is anxious and it's raucous, and it's really a perfect fit for the lyrics. So now the next track, which is called Jose Tries to Leave, is less manic than its predecessor, but it's no less engaging, with some tribal drumming and guitars that like whine and dip and dive as you know, this character called Jose leaves his lover in the early morning, you know, after a sort of alcohol-soaked night, and he tries to jump on an outbound train only to slip and suffer a bloody, terrible end. Now, the following track, which is called Nights Changing, is a great bit of instrumental ambiance that starts off sounding like a calm ocean, you know, or a sunrise, but by the end sounds like, you know, a live wire from like a downed power line or something, you know, sitting next to a puddle of water. It sounds like oncoming darkness and the emergence of, you know, something evil. And the next track, which is called Monument, just comes out swinging with, you know, another rollicking rhythm and some more manic vocals from Bate, who, you know, using the voice of an unnamed character. My theory is that it's the man on the hill who's mentioned in Dark Circles, takes a devilish glee in sort of imagining, you know, murder and also the erection of this tower that he wants to build that's dedicated to chaos and which will, you know, cast a shadow on everything in the town. The similarity in sound between this track and the two tracks I mentioned, Doe-Eyed Girl and Jose Tries to Leave, concerned me a little upon my first listen to the record. You know, I really hoped that Bambara wouldn't trap themselves by, you know, overusing this sort of cowpunk or rockabilly approach. Monument is effective as a track, and it feels like a culmination of the sort of darkness and madness that, you know, maybe infecting this small town that these characters live in. And thankfully, the band, you know, break things wide open on the next track, which is the propulsive track, The Door Between Her Teeth. Now, this just unstoppable bass line and these splashes of guitar noise and just an assaulting rhythm carry this track, you know, like a bullet. And, you know, Bate, you know, he sings of these shadows that not only follow the people of this town around, but they also can change them into these sort of, you know, inhuman, unspeakable things. And then another instrumental track follows, which is called Human Hair, you know, which is, to me, much more nightmarish than the earlier instrumental, though in subtle ways. The use of what sounds like a gong and some chimes in this track give it like a ceremonial or ritual air that kind of, you know, adds to the creep factor that I think is established early on. And things get really interesting on the next track, which is called Steel Dust Ocean, a dramatic track that sounds like the score to a climactic scene in a Western. You know, all big swells of strings and martial drums. It's a welcome shift in sound, and it lends the song an air of great importance, which is heightened by the sense of longing that its narrator, and here I'm assuming this narrator is Jack, the poet, feels for his female love interest of the story, who will ultimately leave him. Now, for Jack, you know, leaving town isn't an option at this point, especially since he knows that he would, quote-unquote, be alone any place. Now, the next track, which is called Sun-Bleached Skulls, introduces a sort of swing rhythm into the mix as the character of Jack looks upon his lover, who seems to have like a slightly supernatural air about her. But what I realized is that I think it's the fact that Jack is looking at her through his poet's eyes that makes her seem that way. And also an infidelity on Jack's part is revealed here in this track. And, you know, Jack's spurned lover sighs, and her sighing, quote-unquote, breathes life into snake skins and dried-up bones. This is a pretty apt metaphor for the back half of this record, I feel, you know, which uses a variety in its approach, and it definitely keeps the record from feeling tired or repetitive. And the modulating synths and eerie sound effects of the next track, which is called Wildfires, you know, reinvigorate the proceedings after the sort of valley that was created by the last few tracks. These images, you know, conjured up by the lyrics of, you know, crudely built altars and, you know, nooses tied and waiting for necks to fill them, give the track a sort of like night before the execution feel. And now the sort of the climax, you know, and the big break, the sundering, happens on the next track, which is called Backyard, on which, you know, Jack's spurned lover, who's now ready to leave, tells him, you know, and the feeling turns out to be mutual, that she will cope with the loss of him by pretending that he is dead and filling the space that, you know, he occupies in her mind with quote-unquote flowers, you know, which in this case appears to be, you know, happy thoughts and experiences and perhaps new love, you know, as a distraction in an attempt to bury her memory of him. And on this track, Bate is joined by a female vocalist. And, you know, this gives the track of a feeling of like representing the climax of the story, the sort of point of no return. And the closing track on the record, which is called Back Home, you know, it sounds very much like an epilogue or a bridge between the story told on this record and, you know, another story related to it, which, you know, maybe a possible sequel or a prequel or, you know, even just another story that's told about this particular town that the characters live in. You know, one can imagine while listening to this track that, you know, Jack maybe finally have decided to leave the town, and you can imagine him sort of driving out of town, and, you know, he's envisioning the rich man on the hill from earlier in the record, you know, who, as we know, is more than meets the eye. And there's this image of the rich man digging a hole in his backyard for a swimming pool. And in the fashion of a true poet, you know, Jack paints the scene for us as the song fades out. He says, "Sculptures hold up a six-column portico, priceless paintings nailed to trees, Cadillacs lined up like cavalry. And in the basement, everything is painted red, except the black disco balls and the mirrors that line the halls. And out back, there's a man-made lake with daybeds and tire swings. The town kids smoke meth and drink behind the scrap metal heap. The guest house lies hidden." End of quote. So, on Shadow, on Everything, Bambera have taken some of the best elements of their sound, you know, dialed down the noise factor several degrees, and produced a record that really encapsulates the sort of small town strangeness popularized, you know, by television shows like Twin Peaks and countless horror films of various quality. Take this oddness and tell the story of some of the town's characters through the eyes of a struggling, sort of hardened or grizzled poet, and you've begun to approach the nucleus of Shadow on Everything. Like any album, one needs to experience this one on his or her own and perhaps even find, you know, their own interpretations, you know, in its malleable sounds and images. I would highly recommend doing it at least once. I gave the record Shadow on Everything a rating of 8 out of 10. All right, so that wraps up the reviews for today. Just like to remind anyone who's listening who isn't a member of the Radio Live Transmission Facebook community, get on Facebook, search for Radio Live Transmission, just the way it appears in the title of the podcast, and you will find us. Get on there and start posting. We have a lot of fun on there, a lot of cool people, people from all over the place posting all kinds of music. So if you want to post it, I want to hear it. So please do that. And also, make sure you guys catch up with me when I release episode 30, on which I will be reviewing new releases from A Place to Bury Strangers, John Prine, The Damned, and also Laura Veers. All right, so once again, this is Ryan for Radio Live Transmission. Thank you guys for listening, and I will catch you next time. Signing off.